Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 3rd of May, 2019, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. Your host today, Mike Robinson, myself, Brian Gerrish. We're delighted to be joined by David Scott. David, of course, reporting from north of the border with northern exposure. There's been some elections, Mike.
Have there?
Apparently.
Okay.
We're just intrigued to see what's been cruising around on the internet. And we picked up on Lewis Goodall here, political correspondent for Sky News. And he thought it was important to point out that the EU Parliament's Brexit negotiator is a happy man this morning. And in his tweet, it's got Guy Verhofstadt, who's saying congratulations to the Lib Dems for their excellent results. Real momentum for pro-Europeans in the UK now ahead of the EU elections 2019. So just a brilliant piece of reporting, Mike, just pointing out so clearly how deeply the EU's tentacles reach into this country.
Well, but aside from that, it's a bit premature because, of course, not all constituencies are declared by any means. So how does he know that the Lib Dems are going to end up ahead of the game at the end of the day?
Well, who knows? Perhaps he's had a hand in organising the elections behind the scenes.
Who knows? But what have the results been then so far?
Well, this was first in this morning, so there will have been some changes, of course, after this. So took this from the BBC. It was a simple graph. What can we see that according to these results that there's now this change in the political climate of UK? The main parties, Conservative and Labour, have taken a hit. Interesting to see UKIP's also taken a hit. That must be remarkable after what has happened over Brexit. But of course, this shows how there's been a backlash against UKIP's new political stance. We'll discuss that another time. But you were interested in the others here on the right of pluses. We've got Greens and we've got Lib Dems, obviously. But we've also got others, and you had some comment on that.
Well, yeah, because the BBC was very keen to make sure that we knew what the Conservatives, Labour and UKIP and the Greens and Liberal Democrats were doing. But the others category, which normally when they publish results of an election, includes independents, for example, and it probably has the least swing of anything. Suddenly it's quite a large swing, but they don't define what that is. And in any of the commentary that the BBC produced on this morning, I didn't see them break down this others number. We're just left to wonder who others are. So I'm not entirely clear.
Well, certainly we know that we've got independents active there. And of course, that's something we're very interested in, because if we can vote for men and women who are putting their personal reputation on the line, to stand for their constituents, perhaps we can break through the party political deadlock.
Mm. Well, now we should say happy Press Freedom Day, because of course this is World Press Freedom Day. And who's behind this? Of course, UNESCO. So this is the 26th global celebration of the World Press Freedom Day. It's taking place in Addis Ababa, which of course is the capital city of Ethiopia. It's jointly organised by UNESCO, the government of the Federal Democratic Republic of Ethiopia and the African Union Commission. So the African Union has a commission. It's very similar in structure to the European Union. So this conference will be held at the headquarters of the African Union in Addis Ababa, and it's going to be focused on, well, we'll have a look and see what it's going to be focused on in 1 second. Now, what is World Press Freedom Day all about? Well, of course, this is what they say every year. 3rd of May is a date which celebrates the fundamental principles of press freedom, to evaluate press freedom around the world, to defend the media from attacks on their independence, and to pay tribute to journalists who've lost their lives in the exercise of their profession. So that all seems pretty laudable, but the question is, what was the theme for this year's conference? And here we go. World Press Freedom Day 2019, Media for Democracy, Journalism and Elections in Times of Disinformation. So we're in times of disinformation. It seems that this narrative now becomes a global narrative, because of course this is the United Nations pushing forward with this. So what are they saying about it? Well, today the contribution of free, pluralistic, independent and safe journalism to democracy is under unprecedented stress, they say. Also, election outcomes and their aftermath are critically affected by political discourse and communications, including the role of the media in relation to the polling process. And so they say that they've got three main topics to discuss here. How the digital era is affecting electoral communications, and how this impacts on existing policies and regulations for elections and for communications related to the internet. And so they're considering things like how can professional journalism play a more visible and distinctive role and compete with emotive content, disinformation, private messaging during elections. So this is very much echoing the narrative of the Department for Digital Media, Digital Culture, Media and Sport, for example, that the mainstream media, so-called professional journalists, need to have their foundation shored up in some way because they're being attacked by emotive content, disinformation and private messaging, particularly during elections. The second thing that they're going to consider is new attempts to undermine the media's role in democracy. For example, they're concerned about discrediting professional journalism and disrupting internet access. And finally, media's potential to contribute to a culture of sustainable peace and democracy. So this is all about sustainable peace and democracy. Well, let's have a look and see what Antonio Guterres, the leader of the United Nations, had to say about this.
A free press is essential for peace, justice, sustainable development, and human rights. No democracy is complete without access to transparent and reliable information. It is the cornerstone for building fair and impartial institutions, holding leaders accountable, and speaking truth to power. And this is especially true during election seasons, the focus of this year's World Press Freedom Day. Facts, not falsehoods, should guide people as they choose their representatives. Yet, while technology has transformed the ways in which we receive and share information, sometimes it is used to mislead public opinion or to fuel violence and hatred. Civic space has been shrinking worldwide at an alarming rate. And with anti-media rhetoric on the rise, so too are violence and harassment against journalists, including women. I'm deeply troubled by the growing number of attacks and the culture of impunity. According to UNESCO, almost 100 journalists were killed in 2018. Hundreds are imprisoned. And when media workers are targeted, societies as a whole pay a price. On World Press Freedom Day, I call on all to defend the rights of journalists whose efforts help us to build a better world for all. Thank you.
So there you go. That's what Guterres had to say. Let me welcome David Scott to the program. Well, I'm just interested in your thoughts on World Press Freedom Day. I mean, you must be feeling secure in the knowledge that that everything that the UK Column does, for example, is we're going to have the freedom to express ourselves, because this is clearly what the United Nations wants to see, right?
You know, the surprising thing is, Mike, I don't. Can you imagine that? It's almost as though we live in a country where they're making up many, many rules which classify free expression of ideas as criminal or deplorable or beyond the pale, and they use this to silence principled opposition.
Absolutely. Now, do you share my concerns that that it's been bad enough in the UK and in Europe and perhaps the US with sort of national campaigns along these lines, but this seems to be taking this narrative to a global level, and in the past, perhaps we've been able to get information from media in other countries that aren't so restricted in their views or aren't so keen to present a particular narrative. This clearly taking the efforts to control the narrative to global status.
It is, and this is addressing the failure. Because this has been all about controlling the narrative, controlling propaganda output, and making sure that the people in key countries think their way and act the way they're meant to. But it's been failing. They've been losing the argument consistently across multiple platforms across the entire globe. The internet has changed this. They can no longer dictate what people believe in the same way. So, yes, it seems to be going global.
Well, it gets better because Jeremy Hunt has been touring Africa in the last few days. Where has he been to? He's He's been to Senegal, Ghana, Nigeria. He was discussing climate change and how to deal with extremism in Nigeria, apparently. And yesterday he was in Ethiopia for the beginning of the World Press Freedom Day celebrations. And he announced £15.5 million of UK aid money to be given to help Ethiopia run transparent, free and fair elections. This is fantastic stuff. So let's have a look at what he had to say. He said a free media provides a channel for people to voice discontent without resorting to violence. If problems and tensions are bottled up, then they are far more likely to boil over. Stopping journalists from reporting a problem does not make it go away. Now, if you've managed to stop laughing by now, then we can look at what else he had to say. He said channels like RT, better known as Russia Today, want their viewers to believe that truth is relative and the facts will always fit the Kremlin's official narrative. In Ethiopia, our embassy has provided training from international experts for 100 journalists in the last 2 years. So he then announced, as I say, £15.5 million, which is going to go towards a new Chevening Africa Media Freedom Fellowship Programme, providing opportunities to 60 African journalists now to gain experience with Britain's leading media organisations. So, David, does that make you feel comfortable? Does that make you feel good that these people are going to get the benefits of Britain's fantastic mainstream media training?
I want to know what he's talking about. RT have a policy that the truth is relative. Since when? He just made that up. That's fake news. He just made that up. And the whole thing, the globalist authoritarian big state agenda, they're underpinned by the belief that there's no such thing as truth, that you cannot know what's true and what's false, and there's an infinite way of interpreting anything, and all you're left with is power, and you speak to extend your power. And that's their underlying philosophy. Maybe Jeremy Hunt should be talking about that, not making up lies about RT.
This is a very good point. And just to end this little section off, I'll just remind everybody, of course, the close links between Chevening, which is a Foreign and Commonwealth Office programme, and Common Purpose. So very close links there. Common Purpose providing training for many young leaders that go through the Chevening programme. I just wonder if this will apply to these 60 new journalists and what benefit they're going to get from that. But David, it goes on because the High Representative of the EU, Federica Mogherini, on behalf of the European Union, has issued a declaration for World Press Freedom Day.
Oh, this is beautiful. Please, you people should look at this in full. And in the after show, I'll read the whole thing out. It is satire at its absolute finest. This, in honour of World Press Freedom Day, she goes on to explain that we've launched the EU Action Against Disinformation. So in order of World Press Freedom, we're going to have an unelected bureaucratic machine dictating what truth is to the entire press. And she finishes off, the EU is promoting free and fair media at home and globally in the relations with third countries, including providing funding for targeted projects to enhance quality journalism. With free journalism under increasing pressure, the EU reaffirms its determination to defend press and media freedom within its borders and worldwide. And before that, she expresses that if the situation doesn't improve, there will be more regulation. So it's a wonderful document.
So let's just have a look at a couple of things. Quality of democratic processes is linked to the state of freedom of expression, as well as media freedom and pluralism. There is no democracy without a truly free press. This is why we have launched the EU Action Plan Against Disinformation that steps up the European response to strengthen the resilience of our societies against disinformation. And she says this with a straight face.
She's there is smiling. No democracy without a free press.
Yeah, she is smiling, but you know, she's able to get the words out.
It's a thing of joy, isn't it? There is no democracy without a free press. And we will now make sure that the press is not free. And she assumes that the press will obediently report this as though there's no contradiction. It's quite lovely.
Yes.
In an Orwellian sort of way.
Yes, in an Orwellian sort of way. Yeah, okay. Well, look, let me just say that if you would like to support some journalism at the UK Column and support what we and David are doing, then please get over to the UK Column community website and join us there. That's at ukcolumn.org/community. So what's next?
Well, it's more Theresa May, really. We come back to our Sky journalist, Lewis Goddall, because another one of his tweets was this one. Theresa May says she's fighting for democracy. It's great, isn't it? We're fighting for free journalism and free press. We're fighting for democracy. Yet she is the one putting it in peril, my peace. And well, I've commented on this, another journalist floundering in a political battlefield that he cannot see and has no chance of understanding, because he seems to believe that Theresa May is in control. But I think, as we're about to discover, it's very clear that Theresa May is not in control. But let's just follow through. Let's bring in Nick Bowles. He said, no surprise to learn that Gavin Williamson leaked the Huawei information from the National Security Council. Most Conservative MPs assumed it was him. He had the opportunity, the motive and previous form. He got the comeuppance he deserved.
Now, that's pretty strong, isn't it?
Well, a lot of people said this is libel, and this man has not been proven guilty. And a lot of people poking fun at Nick Bowles for being catty, I suppose is the right word. But this is really sticking the knife in when no evidence has been produced against Gavin Williamson at all. So we're just illustrating that Theresa May has said what she said. She says, well, I don't want a police investigation, even though it's a security matter. And now we've got MPs turning against each other. This is a poisonous environment. And of course, who's at the back of sort of everything to do with control? But it's your favourite man, Mark Sedwill. So I decided it'd be good just to correspond with Nick Bowles. So we said this, Nick, years ago, you warned correctly, and Danny Kruger confirmed that the Conservatives plan to introduce chaos in UK. Theresa May is not in control. Jeremy Corbyn is not in control. But the Conservative deep state backers are playing Games of Thrones, eating its young. Gavin Williamson hit as he refused EU Defence Union, not 5G. And we've got an exclusive coming up, but it's very clear to us that really is Theresa May running the government, running the country? I don't think so. I think we're looking at something far darker.
Well, indeed, it's clear to us, isn't it? And we've reported on this issue on this programme over the last 6 months or so, that this is a very dangerous situation we're in, with Mark Sedwill at the top of everything. But it's suddenly becoming clear to a lot of other people as well. So here is an article on Conservative Woman. Britain now ruled by civil servants. This is from Bruce Newsom, who is a lecturer in international relations at the University of San Diego. Previously, he was a consultant for RAND Corporation and also the Defence Academy of the United Kingdom. And he says in this article, 2 weeks ago, I warned that parliamentarians are no longer representatives, but oligarchs. Now we learn that civil servants are the highest oligarchs. They are executing power even over secretaries of state. The Prime Minister gave a civil servant, Cabinet Secretary Sir Mark Sedwill, sole power to investigate a leak of the National Security Council's decision to allow the Chinese firm Huawei to build parts of Britain's 5G phone network. Last evening, a week after the leak, Mrs. May fired the Defence Secretary, Gavin Williamson. According to Williamson himself, he was in bad terms with Sedwill. He was not the leaker, and Sedwill did not have proof. And he goes on to say that the significance of the story for him is less about Williamson than May. He says the Prime Minister of this country delegated the future of a Secretary of State to a civil servant, accepted the civil servant's accusation before consulting her minister, and offered the minister only two choices, resign or be dismissed. After their meeting, she wrote a formal letter. No other credible version of events to explain this leak has been identified, she said in the letter, and that's not a citation of proof. At best, it's a diagnosis by exclusion. And he says that Sedwill has managed to accumulate too many positions for his liking. May appointed him National Security Advisor in April 2017, just before she unnecessarily called the general election. His earlier career was in the Foreign Commonwealth Office. Thus, he must share responsibility for the chaos of Britain's defence, security and foreign policy. And he goes on to talk about Britain being signed up to the European Defence Agency, European Defence Fund, EU Defence Procurement Directive. Those signatures, he says, practically, if not legally, entail Britain into the EU's ambition for a common security and defence union by 2025. So this man gets it. This man understands the picture, and he's presenting the information very clearly. But later on in the article, then, he highlights Ollie Robbins. Now, of course, Ollie Robbins is the civil servant in charge of the whole Brexit process. So he ran the negotiations with the EU. He's the man that's got us into this situation with respect to Brexit. And he's making the point that Ollie Robbins moved to the Home Office in 2015 as a deputy to Mark Sedwill. It was Mark Sedwill that brought him then into the Cabinet Office. So Mark Sedwill seems to have brought a little team with him into the Cabinet Office. And he is now basically in control. Now, of course, it's not just this journalist or this commentator, Bruce Newsom, who's talking about this. We highlighted this a few weeks ago. This is Chris Donnelly speaking from a paper that he wrote, I think, in 2015 or possibly a little bit earlier than that. And he was talking about this situation to bring policy making more directly under the control of the Prime Minister. Policy was made primarily a Cabinet Office responsibility. Departments were reduced to elaborating policy. Now, we would argue that things have moved even further from when Chris Donnelly wrote that paper that quote's from, because now it's the Cabinet Office that is pulling the strings of the Prime Minister rather than the other way around. And I think there's plenty of evidence to justify that statement. But nonetheless, what Chris Donnelly was making the point was that since Tony Blair, the structures of government and the way that this country is governed have been changed to a degree that there is no democracy in this country, actually. So all this rhetoric about freedom of the press and upholding democracy is demonstrably false. And in fact, what they're talking about is control of the press in order to uphold the new structures that they have implemented. So when we pushed this picture out on Twitter yesterday, with Mark Sedwill sitting on the throne in the House of Lords and making the point that he is head of the Cabinet Office, he is National Security Advisor, he's head of the civil service. He has absolute control, one man, absolute control of government in this country. And so we've called him King of the United Kingdom. So David, is there anything in that analysis that you disagree with?
No. Now, we've been talking for some time about the government of occupation. And this you see in all branches of government, right down to local government, right down to how we interact with social work and departments like this. But it goes right the way to the top. So what we're seeing here is the capstone on the government of occupation. It makes perfect sense. And it shows how little influence, control, voice we now have as a people in our own country.
Do you agree with the assessment that politicians are no longer representatives, that they are oligarchs?
Why are they silent when they need to be speaking out? Why are they silent when children are being abused? Right, there has to be a mechanism for this. We've talked about this a number of times. What's the mechanism? Well, on one level, it's corruption. It's you keep quiet, you keep your nose clean, and you are set for life, and you just ignore the little people because they don't really matter. That sounds a bit like an oligarch.
Yes. Okay.
Well, let's bring in more information freely circulating on the internet. And clearly people are now seeing the picture for themselves. So this is three individuals that appeared on a lot of Twitter pages yesterday, Lord Browns, Andrew Carn and John Suffolk. And what people are pointing out is these gentlemen were originally intimately connected with the Conservative government. We got Lord Brown, Cameron's Cabinet Office Non-Executive Director, Andrew Carn, Cameron's head of UK trade and investments, and John Suffolk, Cameron's chief information officer. And well, what a surprise, because they are part of Huawei UK. And we understand from other people who've done some very good research that if that's a pattern for the Conservative Party, the same pattern was actually going on in Labour under Blair and Gordon Brown. So we've got a revolving door with ministers moving through into what is essentially a Chinese company. And of course, this brings us to the fact that Gavin Williamson has been skewered on the basis that he leaked information which started to warn about security issues with Huawei coming into Britain's strategic communications. But it gets worse, and we'll bring you this.
Yeah, well, indeed, because
security. This exclusive.
Well, because, you know, the question in my mind, Brian, is why all the attention on Huawei now, today? Why is this happening at this moment in time? Because here's the exclusive. In 2007, Huawei was part of telecoms consortium led by BT to provide high security telephone systems for GCHQ. GCHQ's cybersecurity team expressed concerns at the time and were allegedly silenced. And also alleged is that Mark Sedwill, the favoured man for GCHQ, he was the favoured man for GCHQ and security services.
So, yeah, he was groomed. He was clearly seen as being somebody they could work with. And then, surprise, surprise, Mark Sedwill becomes king of the castle. He's put on the throne. And he's attacking somebody for daring to question about Huawei. But in fact, it was GCHQ's own cybersecurity team who were warning they had significant concerns about bringing in this Chinese company under a BT-led team to actually set up GCHQ top-level security systems. This is quite mind-blowing. I know I'm getting a little bit long in the tooth now, but I think back to my days in the military when we believed that GCHQ and Britain's security services, of course, were beyond reproach in their own security. And yet we're now in a world where one minute we're being warned by the Conservative government that China poses a very real threat. And the next minute we discover that they're actually embedded at the heart of Britain's security systems.
Right.
So why have they gone for Gavin Williamson?
This is the question. So that was 2007. Now, by 2010, then, the concerns expressed by GCHQ seem to have had some effect, because in 2010, the Huawei Cybersecurity Evaluation Centre was established. And this was supposed to be an organisation which provided oversight into the security situation with Huawei equipment, and it was supposed to be run by members of GCHQ. But in 2013, this report was published from the Intelligence and Security Committee, headed up by Sir Malcolm Rifkind, and it was entitled Foreign Involvement in the Critical National Infrastructure. And it said this: while we recognise that the government does not expect the CEL, that's the Cybersecurity Evaluation Centre, to find every vulnerability and that there are other mitigations in place, we remain concerned that a Huawei-run cell is responsible for providing assurance about the security of Huawei products. Because what this report is highlighting in 2013 is that Huawei UK, the subsidiary, was put in charge of actually deciding whether Huawei's equipment was secure or not. And the report goes on to say, before seeking clarification, we assumed that Huawei funded the cell, but that it was run by GCHQ. They went on to say, a self-policing arrangement is highly unlikely either to provide or to be seen to be providing the required levels of security assurance. We therefore strongly recommend that the staff in the cell are GCHQ employees. We believe that such a change is not only in both Huawei's and the government's interest, but it's in the national interest. Now, I don't know at this point in time whether that is the case or whether Huawei UK is still responsible for that organisation. But if you noticed on the first slide that I showed there, the first image that I showed there, the annual report from the cell is published by Huawei themselves. So I suspect that it's still the case that Huawei are providing their self-policing effectively now. So the question comes back again, why was Gavin Williamson fired now? Because this is a long-standing relationship, at least 10 years, between the British government and Huawei, and suddenly it's become a problem. But you know, I just want to remind everybody, of course, if the government is expressing concerns about Huawei, it's not Huawei that has been proven to be spying on our communications over the years. Cisco has also got a cybersecurity, or has had cybersecurity issues in the past, which have allowed Western intelligence services to spy on all traffic, including traffic encrypted using Cisco's VPN products. This came out of Edward Snowden's leaks, admittedly, which showed that the NSA had the ability to spy on Cisco firewall traffic for years. Cisco said that they had patched this. And the question that Engadget is asking in this article is, does anybody in the security community really believe that the patches are, well, can there be any firm proof that the patches have worked and that Western security services are not able to spy on our even encrypted traffic? And this comes back to the question I asked the other day, Brian. People may view China as being a security risk, and they may view Huawei as being a security risk, but equally, our own governments are spying on us as individuals, and Western telecoms companies are helping them do it. Seems to be the case.
You're correct, Mike. What it really says is that we need massive public attention as to what's going on here, and there are thousands of questions that need to be asked about what this hidden security infrastructure is, who's built it, and who's actually in control. This is not something UK Column can do. This is something that the wider public can do. But these questions need to be asked, and need to be asked pretty fast. And I think it's quite clear that whatever we might say and have said about Gavin Williamson's failures in the past, it looks increasingly as though Gavin Williamson was fitted up over Huawei. We've now given some of the background to that. And of course, what do we know that Gavin Williamson did that was correct? He was beginning to show concern at UK's armed forces being subsumed into EU Defence Union. So that's where we should start looking. But some good news, and let's go to Melanie Phillips. This is not a journalist that I would particularly recommend people use, but nevertheless, she's quite popular with a lot of people, did a lot of work with the Mail. But I've got to give her credit here, because it seems that Melanie Phillips, unlike many of our MPs, is starting to understand what's going on. So this is from her website: how the May Sell and Remainer establishment are undermining UK and Western security. I'll do this very quickly just to have a look at her text. As you may have noticed, I've been taking a break from politics, but I wanted to essentially bring your attention to this deeply frightening lecture by Professor Gwythian Prince, one of the founders of the Invaluable Briefings for Brexit website. In it, he doesn't just outline the way in which UK's membership of the EU threatens to undermine the Five Eyes, that's the security alliance, the linchpin of Western security. He also shows how a cabal of civil servants and establishment cultural defeatists that forms the Prime Minister's Praetorian Guard, the May Cell, has actively conspired, look at the language, has actively conspired to ensure that the security of the UK is thus undermined by the EU. Worse still, he shows how Mrs. May's withdrawal agreement would lock the UK into this deepening security disaster. Even worse again, he details manoeuvres carried out in autumn last year to lock the UK into precisely this disaster, regardless of the fact that at the time Mrs. May was purportedly negotiating Britain's exit from the EU. And this is the key bit for me: treachery, pure and simple. We've now got mainstream journalists recognising the country has been betrayed, and now she's using the language. She's not quite there with treason, but she's got to treachery. That's what we're up against, folks. This is why British democracy is currently fighting for its life as the May Cell and Remainer-dominated parliament attempt every ruse in the book and then some to frustrate the will of the people and block Brexit. And what this shows me, Mike, is that we may have our criticisms of individual mainstream journalists, but it's clear they are beginning to wake up, and what people should be doing is supporting this lady who's had the courage now to really put her head above the parapet. Here's the gentleman she's talking about, and I'll give you a little bit of the detail of what he said. The first crow flapped into sight in September 2017. The Department for Exiting the EU issued an alarming paper, The Future Partnership. The paper wished to offer and obtain what it says on the cover, partnership. This may be good-hearted, but it was utterly naive, betraying ignorance of what the EU is and how it works. Partnership, as we might understand it, is not on offer from the EU. And this is the key bit. Participation of any kind is structurally prescribed to be integration, not cooperation. This cannot be stressed too often. Now, I've got a little bit more, but David, this man has absolutely hit the nail on the head. You may think you are discussing and you're in partnership with the EU. What the EU really sees this as is weakness, as you are being drawn into its spider's web.
Absolutely right. And this is the man who briefed Gavin Williamson, what, 1 week before he was dismissed. So this is the information that was getting into the hands of senior politicians and seems to be terminal for their careers. The EU has always had this strange use of language. We used to talk about people negotiating to join the EU. There was no negotiation. It was simply to agree the interim transitionary arrangements. The deal was always you accept everything. All EU law, past, present and future. There are no exceptions. That was the negotiating position. It was just how you got there that was open for some debate. The bit you said earlier, gentlemen, about GCHQ and Huawei, this is outstanding, because if I'm looking at an article in the Telegraph here that's reporting the concerns of the Donald Trump administration, and specifically Mike Pompeo, who is he's Secretary of State and was, of course, former director of the CIA. And he's talking about how concerned they are over 5G. You read this paper and there's no mention of this 7-year background of concern over the same company and GCHQ. It's almost as though the CIA are pretending not to know any of this. Mm. It seems very deceptive in the light of what you've presented today.
David, we've only really just got started on this one. And just so that it's clear to our viewers and listeners, the high-level telephone system we're talking about in relation to GCHQ and Huawei is a GCHQ system. This isn't a system being fitted elsewhere in UK. This is actually GCHQ's own internal top-level security systems, where BT brought in a consortium which included Huawei. So it's mind-boggling in terms of potential security breaches. In my mind, we've got a lot of questions to answer. Watching the clock, let's just move on with Mr. Prince. Just wanted to give you this bit. He says this: so thus misguided, the September paper advocated many forms of future structural attachment, notably the Common Security and Defence Policy, the EU Common Security and Defence Policy, missions and operations under the EU military planning and conduct capability. And then he says the killer statement, an ersatz EU standing HQ. This is exactly what David Ellis has been warning about, is that everything to do with EU military and security and ultimately police is to be brought under one single point of EU control. And Professor Prince is warning here that the UK has already been brought into that. And I'll just end here. He says this in his final paragraph: the people have chosen the wider world, i.e. to break away. The officials and the May cell have chosen military EU. This is absolutely the wrong choice. It's therefore an inescapable fact that the Orwellian non-withdrawal documents pose a real and present threat to UK national security in the most fundamental way possible. This man is talking treason, He's talking of treason by the government, and he is warning the nation of the danger which they face as a result of May's deceit within this cell. This is really the most incredible, I think, UK column news that we've ever put out, because the evidence is on the table that Britain's own government, not only betraying the nation, but in fact committing treason in giving away the security of this country to foreign powers and attempting to hide its trail. We'll have more on this next week. But let's just break here with an advert on the 4th of May at Salt Cellar, Church Lane, Oldham. There's a talk about 5G and, of course, the dangers of 5G. And I hope people will be able to attend. The time of that is 1:30 to 4:00. And the price to get in is £5. So freeze the page and have a look at the details there. And we'll leave that section.
Yes. Now, here is Mariusz Błaszczak, who is the Polish defence minister. What's he saying? We can say the decision to increase the number of American troops in Poland has been made. Now, we showed a little bit of video a few months back of the arrival of American troops, particularly in the eastern and northeastern part of Poland. Well, it seems that what they're going on to say is that they are not far away from signing a contract for the F-35. So they're asking for more occupation by the US of Poland, and they're asking to get in on the F-35 project. This is a really silly thing to do. But anyway, what's the Russian attitude to this? Well, here's Sergei Lavrov. And he said, stationing NATO combat forces on the territory of its eastern members is a violation of the 1997 NATO-Russia Founding Act. And talking about the comments from the Polish defense minister, he said, Blaszczak's statement reflects the US policy of ruining any agreements on ensuring security in the Euro-Atlantic region. And he said, Russia has no plans to attack Poland or any other member country for that matter. Now, I have to say, just to finish this little section on Poland, Brian, that I know that the Polish government may be asking for further US deployment to Poland and more troops, more occupation. Yeah. But the Polish people in the area have had enough, more than enough, of the US being there. They're sick of the road accidents. They're sick of the drinking and the behaviour of US servicemen in Poland. And so this is something which is not supported by the people in the country. But David, let's continue the theme. Well, Kiev is to host the spring session of NATO 2020.
Yes, this is a biannual meeting of sort of internal parliament for NATO, and it's going to Ukraine, May 2020, in Kiev. This seems to be an enormous provocation in terms of Russia, and it's making very clear that the plan is for the Ukraine to become part of NATO, part of the EU, part of NATO. It's all one thing. The Ukrainian parliament passed a constitutional amendment stating that Ukraine is committed to joining NATO. And remember that we're committed to the integrity of the Ukraine, including Crimea. Our Prime Minister has stated this, which means we are committed to some degree of conflict with Russia. And this, against this background, we're all going to move to Ukraine for the next NATO meeting. Now, I was just having a little look at what else is on the Ukraine and NATO in the last few days, and there's a lot on Twitter. We have here NATO in Ukraine has its own Twitter account, and they are tweeting about the adoption of this Kiev as the location for the meeting in 2020, and the NATO's own press Twitter account is talking about how wonderful this is to expand NATO as a means of providing stability and security in Europe. I'm not sure that's how it will look in eastern Ukraine.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you very much for that, David. Now, we're right out of time, but I just wanted to mention this. because the Daily Mail yesterday published a pretty disgraceful article about David Noakes and GC Math. It was published by, the writer was a lady called Lara Key, who apparently is, I think, 3 or 4 years out of university, so not much experience. But nonetheless, it was a pretty despicable and pretty much lacking in any kind of fact.
It was a smear.
It was a total hit piece, yes, absolutely.
It was a smear.
A total hit piece. And, I just wanted to highlight the fact that Ian Crane was in the studio, UK Column studio, yesterday with David Noakes and Lynn Thayer to do an episode of Humanity versus Insanity. That was published last night. If you search for the persecution of David Noakes and Lynn Thayer, I strongly recommend people watch that interview to get to the bottom of what this topic is about and to understand why this man is being attacked so viciously in the press. And that brings us full circle because, of course, on Press Freedom Day, it seems that we have less and less freedom of the press in this country as they simply parrot what they're told to parrot as by way of a narrative without any rational thought or
proper investigative journalism.
Exactly.
Is the key bit,
yes.
isn't it, Mike? I have still got to watch that interview myself, so I encourage people to watch it. And I'll also say it's up to all of us to stand up for people who are brave enough to be trying to do what's right in society. And certainly David Noakes and Lynn, two of those people, they need our support. And let's get the facts out about what GC Math could and could not do. And let's challenge the Daily Mail. Of course, Daily Mail is changing its spots a little bit, isn't it?
That's right. If we just mention that in passing and put this one back up, people may have noticed that the Daily Mail has changed its logo. I suspect that follows the editorial changes that have been absolutely apparent in the last number of months since Paul Dacre left
this
as
is,
editor.
To me, the Daily Mail there, the use of those fonts has got a rather sort of comical style to it. It's a little bit cartoonish, which seems to be how the paper is going. But maybe that's just me.
Yeah, well. Mm.
Okay, David Scott, thank you very much for joining us. We'll say to our audience, thank you for joining us. UK Column is putting out some very, very important information at the moment. We do our best to do this and to make sure it is accurate. We've given a major exclusive about what's happening with Huawei and GCHQ. And of course, that impacts on Gavin Williamson. Please help us to spread this information because that is the whole point of these broadcasts. And as you've seen, the government is intending to close down on anybody who dares challenge the government narrative. And that's going to be helped, of course, by the European Union. That's it.
Well, we should just mention that Monday is a bank holiday.
Indeed,
so we won't be in the studio on Monday. We will see you next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.